And welcome into the Monday edition, Robbie and Rexro, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, brought to you by First Horizon, Big Bank Muscle, Small Bank Hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexro, Nick Keyser here with you on this Monday morning. Hope everybody had a fantastic weekend as we get the week started this week with some rain and some storms moving into the area last night. So hope everybody's okay after that. Joe Rexro, happy Monday morning to you. What's going on? How we doing?
Yeah, that was my first question. I really don't know. I know that we had four humans and two dogs in a bathroom last night, and you always watch those weather forecasts, and it's like, you know, here's where the cycle is, and it's this street and this street. It's like, oh, those are our streets. Yep, that's okay. Yeah. So that's a block away, but I hope everybody's okay. I know that there was going to be some more stuff I went through Franklin apparently, and I just slept for a few hours and haven't heard anything, but hopefully everybody's all right and we didn't sustain anything serious.
Yep, hope so. I know that I think there was one. I'm watching Fox 17 right now. There's a tornado that touched down last night in McEwen, so that for sure, and then they're kind of going through some other stuff here, so hopefully everybody's okay this morning. It's gross out there this morning as well if you're driving around today, so just make sure you give yourself some extra time. It's a little wet on the roadways as well. We got a lot to get into on the program today. Obviously, we're going to get into Tennessee and their weekend, both the win against Kentucky and then the loss yesterday in the Elite Eight against Houston. We'll get into that. Corey Curtis will join us at 8 o'clock for his weekly visit. Some things going on at the owners' meetings with the Titans that we'll get into as well. And then Max Herz will be with us for a few minutes at 7:30 to look ahead to what he and Chris Mason are going to be doing tomorrow night on the broadcast, an animated broadcast that those guys went and rehearsed last week in New York. They'll be doing it tomorrow for the game as well. So lots to get into on the program today. We'll take your thoughts in the meantime. 615-737-1025, our phone number, 615-737-1025. Joe, a range of emotions for Tennessee fans this weekend. You start on Friday in a massive game in the Sweet 16, and Tennessee pretty much handles Kentucky from start to finish in that game. They looked really good. They dominated Kentucky. We talked all week last week, Joe, about how difficult it is to beat a team three times. Kentucky not able to pull that off. So you've got the jubilation on Friday night, Joe, of what was, I think, as we discussed on Friday, pretty clearly probably the biggest win in school history as it relates to the men's basketball front. And then you follow it up yesterday, Joe, with a chance to finally break down the door and to get to the Final Four. And you just come out with a dud against Houston. They win 69-50. You scored 15 points in the first half, which is not good. And here we are again talking about Tennessee being eliminated, Joe, in the Elite Eight. So I'll let you kind of pick it up from there. What did you make of kind of the extreme of both ends for Tennessee's weekend here in the NCAA tournament?
Yeah, just nightmare first half yesterday after kind of a dream whole game against Kentucky. I mean, it was just it was quickly in that Kentucky game there was just little doubt, you know, who was the better team and who was going to win. Kentucky made a couple little runs and, you know, tried to get it inside double figures. They made a little run, and then Tennessee gets the five straight, the steal and the Ziegler three, and it's just over. And so, I mean, that was obviously very gratifying for Tennessee fans and the opposite of gratifying for Kentucky fans. And then, yeah, just yesterday, it's funny, the Elite Eight, I mean, you had a 1-2, 1-2, 1-2, and 1-3. And I don't know if it's worse, you know, Tennessee, Alabama, Michigan State all came out and really just played crappy games. I mean, the opponents deserve credit for sure, but all three of them really just kind of laid eggs. I don't know if it's worse to do that or be Texas Tech and basically have it won against Florida. Ugh. And completely blow it, which is what happened Saturday night. But it's a combination of things. One is Houston is just – Yeah, the difference between Houston and Tennessee, you're talking about, again, maybe the two best defensive teams in the country. But the difference is one of them is way bigger and stronger than the other, you know, and that you saw that. Like, just they're just taller everywhere, or stronger everywhere. And then I did think the Vols in the first half yesterday had several shots that you'll take. Like, you'll take those shots. It wasn't like it was just complete lockdown where they couldn't even get a look at the basket, and they've got shot clock violations every other possession. I think sometimes you get into it, you know, you can't get in the lane. You can't really get anything going, inside out at all. And then I think they started to get to the where it's like the first okay shot they were taking. You know, that whole, like, coaches talk about all the time. You know, go one side or the other, make the defense at least move a little bit. You might find a little bit of a seam, or at least a little bit more open shot. And they started, I think, panicking a little bit, settling a little bit. Love the fight in the second half, and they get it to 9. They got to 10 for sure. They had a, you know, couple chances in the second half to push him, but then Houston always answered with a shot, or, you know, some kind of a play. I mean, Houston's really freaking good. So, you know, it's unfortunate for the Vols. I think you see yesterday the flaw in the team, which to me is like you lose Adu and Awaka, and, you know, Milicic and Okpara as replacements were good. But like in this game, you see where it's just not good enough. You know, it's just, the front court just wasn't good enough. And it's not Rick Barnes' fault that JP Estrella got hurt this year, but, you know, another burly guy like in yesterday's game, like Awaka would have been so huge in yesterday's game. Just someone who could like battle with somebody inside and root out some space and maybe get you a bucket inside.
Well, the bottom line is when you score 15 points in the first half, you're going to have a tough time winning. I mean, it's just, it's one of those things where you appreciate the fight, and Rick Barnes talked about that after the game yesterday, and I think Tennessee deserves credit for that, but when you score 15 in the first half, you just don't give yourself a shot. I mean, it's almost impossible to come back and win when the offensive output is that low in the first half. And, you know, I saw some Tennessee fans talking yesterday about how the moment was too big for them, and you could see that they were just kind of, you know, choking it away out there in the first half. I don't know. Like, I don't know what the quote-unquote mental approach was for them yesterday. I tend to probably be more with you, where I looked at Houston, I was like, good Lord, these guys are freakishly big. They can all move, and they're a really good defensive team. And the bottom line is, like, when you look at most metrics, Joe, the best four teams in the country are now the best four teams remaining, and Tennessee's just on kind of the outside looking in at those four.
Just outside. Yeah. 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 I don't think it was, I don't think it was like the moment of the Elite Eight at all. I think Houston made it worse. Now maybe it's like Houston, and then it's like, oh my God, and this game's so big. Eventually, again, you just get outside of yourself a little bit. But whatever it was, yeah, I mean, you know, they didn't play well, and then they had some shots that they didn't hit. And 15 points, like you said, no number one or number two seed has ever scored that few in the first half of a game of the tournament in any round. I mean, that's just, you know, it's a just a brutal, brutal half. So, yeah, again, look, they're not as good as Houston. And you know, for anybody who follows KenPom, you know, who's been doing his thing since Ken Pomeroy, 1996, 97, you know, which is something the selection committee uses, and, you know, it's basically efficiency rankings. So the four teams in the Final Four are four of the top 10 most efficient teams of all time being in his, since he's been doing it since 96, 97. I
That's
mean,
pretty wild.
it is wild. So, you know, you could say that this is the most loaded Final Four ever because of that. And yeah, these two seeds, you know, Tennessee, Michigan State, Bama, Texas, or Texas Tech wasn't a two. St. John's was the only two that really stunk it up and didn't get anywhere in this tournament. But they're a little bit not as good as the ones. I think it's just disappointing that I still think they're close enough that those should have been better games, including Tennessee's.
Yeah, and then, you know, that's sometimes the beauty and the curse of the tournament here. And we're, you know, look, as time goes on, you can continue to unpack, and we're going to do that as the show goes on today, the season as a whole and what this thing actually means for Tennessee basketball. But it is amazing how in this tournament you can go from just such a good performance and a good feeling about yourself, the way you're playing, the way things are trending for you on Friday, and then the first half of a game on Sunday, it just completely turns around. I mean, look, go look at Alabama, right? Like, Alabama couldn't miss a shot against BYU, and then you looked in the first half against Duke, and you're down double digits, and you don't know what happened to you. Like, you just you're staggered at that point, and by the time you recover from it, it's too late. And Alabama really never recovered from it. I mean, Tennessee got back in it a little bit into the second half, but like I said, when you score 15 points in the first half, you give yourself no shot in the second half.
Yeah, and you know, there's a common thread there. Well, actually, I mean, you think about, like, Zakai Ziegler, 18 points, 10 assists against Kentucky, totally has the game on a string. Mark Sears, 10 threes, 34 points against BYU. And then Duke, Houston, longer, you know, taller everywhere, played great. And both of them just, you know, just got taken out of their games or just weren't effective at all. I mean, Mark Sears couldn't get anything going. Duke just bullied him in that game. And, you know, he had a few threes, and if you're not going to hit your – I mean, he's basically pulling up for 25-footers. If you're not going to hit those, it's going to be a long night. And then, again, Ziegler yesterday just couldn't get – you know, whenever he did get some room, there's a big, tall guy waiting. I mean, they are an amoeba of a defense. So, yeah, like, starting with those point guards, incredible performances in Sweet 16, and then real big disappointments in their final games in the Elite Eights.
So Tennessee goes down in the Elite Eight to Houston yesterday. We'll take your thoughts on that game, and we'll unpack what all this means for Rick Barnes and this Tennessee basketball program here. Take your thoughts on that, 615-737-1025. More coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Robbie and Rex Road broadcasting live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Tennessee gets the big win Friday against Kentucky, only to have it all come crashing down yesterday in the Elite Eight against Houston. They lose 69-50 to Houston yesterday, and we got a bunch of one seeds in the Final Four, which we'll get into that a little bit later in the show. So now, as we sit here and kind of unpack all this, Joe, what does it all mean for this Tennessee basketball program, for Rick Barnes and the future of this team moving forward? Obviously, you know, this has been the Zakai Ziegler era, and they've wanted to punch down the door and get him to the Final Four, and they came up just a little bit short in this tournament run. The discourse began immediately online yesterday, Joe, among Vol Twitter, some of which very frustrated.
Oh, really?
Of Rick Barnes can never win the big one, or this is if this team could get to the Final Four, this program will never get to the Final Four. Lots of frustration in the aftermath of the loss yesterday, and then some other discourse as the day went on of winning big for this program is exactly what they've been doing, so leave things alone and be quiet. A lot of back and forth on that on Vol Twitter. So, Joe, as we get to kind of sift through the end of this here, and you have the sour taste in your mouth if you're a Tennessee fan, based on the way that game went yesterday, how do you begin to unpack the accomplishment of the run here and then what this could mean for the future of this program, now obviously with some changes coming on the personnel front next year?
Yeah. Well, first of all, on the point about, like, this team, you know, I thought just because of the situation, you know, that they had a better chance, you know, the situation being not playing Zach Edey, playing obviously a great team in Houston, but, you know, not a team playing a home game. It really was more of a Vols home game yesterday. So I thought that it lined up for Tennessee, and I said that Friday. I said, I think this is going to be the year. But the idea that if this team came, I mean, last year's team was better than this year's team, guys. I mean, that's absolutely not just because Dalton Knecht was on last year's team. They also had, and I know Vescovy didn't shoot well last year and all that, but he still was like a good player, good defensive player. Josiah James was a good player. And again, Jonas Adu, you could throw the ball in and get a bucket. Toby Awaka would come in, uproot somebody. He was one of the best offensive rebounders in all of college basketball last year. Like, you know, again, Akpara, it was a good replacement, and he did some good things. He could protect the rim. He could, you know, put your lobs down, but you can't throw the ball into the guy. Milicic, just, you know, physicality with him, as we saw, it's just in certain matchups, he just didn't have that. So, like, last year's team was flat out better than this year's team. So, and I guess I would say probably last year's team was probably the best Barnes team, I probably since the Grant Williams team, you know? I mean, they had the Kennedy Chandler team too that lost to Michigan, with Ziegler as a freshman, which certainly was talented, but this was not Rick Barnes' best team. So then you get into, okay, so but where does it go now? Look, Tennessee, I mean, this is where it gets interesting with these SEC schools, Tennessee included, you know? If Rick was pretty adamant this last weekend, like, you know, he made one comment about how he's going to miss Ziegler, and people took that as him retiring, but he is 70 years old. I mean, it's a natural thing to talk about, right?
Sure.
But he's pretty adamant, you know, that he's coming back, which, again, if you're a Tennessee fan, Tennessee basketball fan, you should be happy with that. But hey, you do you, you know? If you want to move on, and you're sick of only getting to, you know, the second and third Elite Eights in school history,
Those
well,
darn Elite Eights.
yeah, you know, then I mean, you know, then that's your right to complain. But it does get interesting with, obviously, this is now, I mean, Mayshak too, Ziegler and Mayshak, those are central, just fantastic players. They're both up for National Defensive Player of the Year. And you know, Ziegler leaves as like the all-time assist leader in the SEC. I mean, yeah, like these are huge losses. You know, Lanier. I mean, you are rebuilding a team. Gainey, you're rebuilding a team. So, what is? I mean, I think Tennessee is going to be well funded, but we are having revenue sharing now next year. So now, what's most important? You said it yourself. Hey, man, get that money to the football team. Yeah, right? Like, you cannot cut any corners with the football team. So. I'm interested in that perspective. You know, if you're Rick Barnes looking at it like, okay, so is it going to be harder to get into the portal and get people? I do know, Chaz Lanier, you know, BYU, I've been told, offered him considerably more than Tennessee did. But you got, you know, the opportunity to be developed by Rick Barnes, the opportunity to learn how to play defense. By Tennessee, and give yourself a better chance at the NBA. And you know, even the opportunity to go to a place where football is huge. Like, Tennessee has things in its favor where it doesn't always have to just outbid people to get players. But that's a big part of it, is Rick Barnes is known as probably as good a developer of players. Look at what Dalton Knecht, he came in here. Yeah, he was great, but also, again, learn how to play D. You got to do this in the NBA. And so if Rick Barnes is here, I think they're going to be able to recruit slash get really good players out of the portal. But it is a huge rebuild in this moment right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the big question here is as soon as next season, how much can you reload? Like, there's some huge losses that they're going to have with this year's group that you're going to have to go out there and try to find a way to replenish. So can you do that effectively enough where you're back in a similar spot next year with a chance to eventually break down the door? Now, look, I'm totally with you on the Tennessee basketball front. Like, we've talked about this, and I don't think there's a ton of Tennessee fans that feel this way. I do think there are some loud Tennessee fans that feel this way of, well, Rick Barnes just isn't good enough. Like, he's not cutting it, and we want better. It's like, well, that's great. You can want better. I don't know who that is at the current moment. And we've talked about, you know, it would be a shame if you got all the way through the Rick Barnes era, whenever that ends, whether it's, you know, now or next season or 5 years from now. I have no idea. But if you get through that entire time and you never get to the Final Four, based on the regular season success that they've had and the postseason success, right? Like, they've won SEC tournaments. They've gotten to some Elite Eights. This has been clearly the best run in Tennessee men's basketball history. It would be a shame if you got through the end of that and you never got a Final Four to show for it. You know, are they going to get there at some point? I don't know. Like, it's a really difficult thing to do, obviously. You know, they have been knocking on the door, knocking on the door, knocking on the door, and they've not been able to break that part of it down. So I understand, like, if you're a Tennessee fan and it's frustrated by that. Well, what I continue to not understand is the lack of perspective on this job, what it's been, and potentially what it could still be after Rick Barnes is done. Now, I think Rick Barnes has elevated it, and I think there's been enough long-term winning here now under him and his watch with this program that it probably has transformed the profile of this program and the attractiveness of it whenever that next stop comes from whoever that's going to be after Rick Barnes. But I do think the lack of perspective on what this program has been basically since before he got here, like you had the great run with Pearl, and that's, you know, you've had a couple of runs at different points in your basketball history. But there's, I still think, continuing to be a lack of perspective on what he's done.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, the thing about Rick Barnes, obviously, when he came to Tennessee, it was he had all these incredible teams at Texas. He had so many of them that underperformed, you know, relative like to their seeding the NCAA tournament and stuff. He only got to the one Final Four, you know, at Texas. He had a tremendous run of like regular season championships and, you know, great players and all that stuff. I mean, again, like, you know, the last 3 years, you're talking about three straight Sweet 16s, you're talking about, you know, two straight Elite Eights. I mean, the underperforming your seed was a thing with Rick Barnes. Well, that hasn't happened. And you think about the Sweet 16. So you have the two straight Elite Eights. Again, you lost as the two to the one. You know, that's performing to your seed level. But also, like, it's hard to perform to your seed level and get that far in a tournament. And then you have the Sweet 16 2 years ago where you beat Duke and you didn't have Zakai Ziegler in that tournament, you know. And you know, look, that was also disappointing. They Tennessee was up with a pretty good lead on Florida Atlantic and blew that. But you didn't have Ziegler, and I guess we've figured out Florida Atlantic was a decent team. So Rick Barnes really has, like, done a lot to change, the narrative, I guess, on him with tournament performance. But I get it. It's like, okay, but what about the Final Four? Can you get to a Final Four? And now, I mean, it's just it's players that TBD, you know, and that's where it's like in college hoops, it used to be, okay, with this recruiting class and that recruiting class, this guy's ready, that guy's ready. He's had some really promising young players that have left recently because they weren't getting time this year, which is too bad. And so you really have to – I mean, they could go nuts in the portal and have a great team next year. This is certainly possible. I think, like, J.P. Estrella is going to be a good player. They got some guys, you know, that are coming up that are going to, I think, be there and be good. But, they have a lot of work to do. And does Rick Barnes – you know, how long does he want to do it? I mean, that's a big question. I still – I'm not closing the door on the idea that, you know, he looks around, says, man, you know, Zakai and Jamai are out of here. And it's just, do I really want to get into this? And now we have to deal with the revenue sharing. And so now it's like fighting more for resources. I'm not closing the door on the idea that at some point this offseason he might look around and say, okay, I think this is the right time.
615-737-1025, our phone number. More of your thoughts on Rick Barnes and Tennessee's loss in the Elite Eight yesterday, how to unpack it moving forward, and what to make of where they go from here. We'll continue to take your thoughts on that. We've got some updates from the NFL owners' meetings to get to later this hour as well. Lots coming up on Robbie and Rex Row, 1025, 1063, The Game. Robbie and Rex Road brought to you by First Horizon, Big Bank Muscle, Small Bank Hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Kieser here with you on this Monday morning. Taking your thoughts on the Vols, 615-737-1025, our phone number. Trevor from Waverly, Joe, says Tennessee should hang on to Barnes as long as he'll stay. Don't be like the Titans and run your coach out of town. We see how that's going. This is from Trevor from Waverly.
Well,
don't be like the Titans should be a bumper sticker.
If Amy Adams Strunk were the Vols AD, how fired would Rick Barnes have been in like 2020?
Rick, it's time for you to go. You're too nice. We got to get some jerk in here now. Thank you.
She would have fired Rick in 2020 for having no NCAA tournament wins in the 2020 NCAA tournament,
which didn't exist.
Right.
Good stuff. Dustin from Hopkinsville says, Tennessee, Rick Barnes is going to rebuild the team. It'll surprise all Tennessee fans. He's a great coach, and as a Kentucky fan, I'm rooting that he gets a good team to compete with Kentucky every year. Love the rivalry. How about that perspective from Dustin from Hopkinsville today? A little bit of respect thrown Rick Barnes' way.
You know that is nice. Now, let's see. What else has Dustin said today? He says, LOL, nothing better than leaving the show Friday. No show for the weekend. You beat us, then turn around and still zero Final Fours. You thought! Well, in all caps.
some respect.
Dustin has a lot of thoughts, including that Kentucky just gave the game to Tennessee. I mean, he said UK played their worst game, period. Yes, UK didn't play a good game. Tennessee completely annihilated their defense. And again, I'm giving Houston credit too yesterday. Houston blew Tennessee up. So then all of a sudden you start missing some shots that you hope that, you know, that you they look like shots that you normally make and you miss them. Why? There is a correlation between getting absolutely bullied and having your stuff messed up that you like to run, and then all of a sudden you kind of put up quick shots and miss them. And Kentucky's offense against Tennessee Friday for stretches looked a lot like Tennessee's offense yesterday against Houston. And in both cases, you have to look at the opponent and say, yeah, they did some stuff to really mess them up.
One thing, if you're a Tennessee fan, that I think is going to be fair to wonder, and I don't know what the answer to this is. It was this year's shot, and you could probably put the last 2 years together. Were those the best shots that they're going to have at the Final Four under Rick Barnes? I don't know. As you mentioned, there's a lot of work to do for Tennessee for next year's team. Like, it's hard to sit here today on March 31st, Joe, with the losses that we know that they're going to have and predict that they're going to be anywhere near as good next year. Now, again, it's hard to predict that because you have no idea how many people they're bringing in. Like, what's the portal going to look like? You know, do they get some freshmen that come in and play really, really well? I don't know. Like, it's going to be – so they could come in and be better than next year, depending on what they do this offseason. It's just hard to predict, as we sit here today, exactly where that's going to go. So, if you are a Tennessee fan that has enjoyed this run of success in basketball under Rick Barnes, and you're asking the question of, well, these last two teams have been really darn good, and they've been right on the edge of getting to the Final Four and haven't been able to break it down. Are we ever going to have a better shot than you just had these past 2 years? That, Joe, I think is a fair question to ask as they move forward here.
Definitely. Yeah, I can't sit here and say, oh, I promise you it'll be better. Look, you know, there's – everybody talks about, you know, NIL and the portal and stuff. So you have to have the resources. I mean, I think Tennessee will. But again, you know, this is going to be the story here moving forward with revenue sharing is, you know, there are leagues in power leagues in basketball that are not power leagues in football. Like the Big East does not care about football. The Big East now is a pure basketball conference. So, you know, some of these programs, I mean, look what BYU is doing. They got the number one recruit in the country coming in next year. And again, they were hard after Chaz Lanier. They are out there spending. Okay. And there's some places out there that are not going to have to worry about football. Now they're not going to have the football money, but again, the $20.5 million of revenue sharing, they're going to have that, and then most of it's going to go to basketball. So how does that look for SEC teams? Is this the peak of the SEC? Which, by the way, give the SEC its flowers. It has backed it up every round here, and you know the best conference ever in a regular season is, you know, sitting here and has done the work in the tournament. Now, I suppose you got to win it all to really close that up, right? But this could be the peak of the SEC. I can't tell you that Rick Barnes is going to have great teams. It's not just about, you know, the resources. It's about choices. Incredible choice with Dalton Connect.
Yeah.
The day they got Dalton Connect, did we even talk about it on the show? Probably not. You know, I mean, like, okay, you know, it's like, hey, good player for Northern Colorado. We'll see. And he turns out to be just amazing. So can they continue to evaluate like that and find the right guys? I mean, Chaz Lanier ended up being a heck of a pickup. He was terrific this year. So can they do that at a high level? Because I do think that, again, the front court is where this team, you know, just took a step backward. And it's too bad, you know, with Adu, a couple things. First of all, my understanding is, again, Arkansas, that Tyson Chicken money, like they went after him hard. And by the way, Arkansas doesn't make anywhere near the run they did if not for him. He was fantastic. But you look at that too, and you think, what if Tennessee had that? Again, a guy who can go get you a bucket in there, you know? And that's where, you know, that's where they didn't do well enough. And so now you have so many holes to fill. But it's just like the culture guys that go back to Josiah, you know, Vescovy, and really Josiah kind of took even the baton from Grant Williams. You know, he helped recruit him there. You kind of are starting over with that stuff. And so that's not a comforting thought.
It's not. But having said that, you know, what you just brought up, I think does give you reason for optimism, right? Because they did go find Dalton Connect, and they did bring in Chaz Lanier, and they're clearly, they've got a process here in the portal that has worked. So it doesn't guarantee that it's going to work every year, but they're on a pretty nice run now of bringing in impactful players out of the portal. They're going to have to do it again next year, and then we'll see kind of where things stand after that. But, you know, we've talked so much about the talent that they're losing. They have demonstrated an ability to go identify people, bring them in, and to have them pretty seamlessly fit into the way they do things here. So, like, I still think, like, if Rick Barnes is staying and he's gonna be hanging around here, which it seems like he is, then the track record is what the track record is. Like, he's gotten this thing to a point where I think you know that they're going to put together a team that's going to be pretty good, and they're going to have a good amount of success in the regular season. And then come tournament time, I guess the old theory is, Joe, if you knock on the door long enough, eventually you'll break it down. I know some Tennessee fans say that that's great, that's probably not going to happen, and don't operate that way. That's the theory you go by. And the track record tells me that, you know, based on the track record that he's got with the portal there, they're probably going to find one or two guys that come in and are really impactful for him next year.
Yeah, exactly. And he's got a terrific staff. And, you know, that's the thing. There's standards and expectations in that program that are that have been consistent, and they're not going to change. And so, no, they're going to be good. And then you get into, I mean, to me, I don't know exactly who it is, but at some point, you know, you do have to think about what's next. If I'm a Tennessee fan, yeah, I mean, I understand the allure of, you know, you should look around, you should open up the search. You know, who knows who you could get out there? I think this job has, like you said, Robbie, it's a much more attractive job. But also, I think someone from his tree should be an attractive option if you can find the right one, because you want this style of basketball. It works. I understand no Final Fours, but you can't tell me that, you know, again, you know, it's crazy because, again, last year, like, it was a much, to me, tougher game, and they were right there to win it, and then yesterday they weren't. So, disappointing. But, yeah, I do believe in that theory of knocking on the door. I mean, if you can do what they've done in the tournament, you can win another game. And so, you know, I think Tennessee fans should want that. I got someone in the text that says, as a Georgia fan, we'll gladly take Rick off y'all's hands. We'll gift you Mike White for free. Well, then Danny would – coach's brother.
Nice family reunion.
Yeah. Scotty from Dixon says, it doesn't matter who your coach is. You shoot 1 for 15 and threes in the first half, high chance you're going to lose. Mike says, Rick Barnes sucks. He can only get them so close. They've only ever been so close. Yes, Mike, but again,
I knew we'd get one.
They've been to three Elite Eights in their history. That's the farthest they've ever gone. Rick Barnes just created two of those three in the last 2 years. So, I mean, again, you can have perspective or not.
I mean, Tennessee fans have already crafted who's going to be Barnes' replacement, Joe, when that time comes.
Really?
Yeah, it's going to be Bruce Pearl. Bruce Pearl's coming back home.
Is that really what
Ball Twitter says? Yeah.
Well, good for Bruce Pearl, by the way. Bruce Pearl is his second Final Four with Auburn. So, you know, good for him. Good coach. I don't think that's going to happen. Bruce Pearl is – you know, Bruce Pearl's plan is he is going to coach to a certain point. He is going to retire, and Stephen Pearl is going to take over that program. That's his plan. I don't know if Auburn's plan is that, but that's his plan.
Bruce Pearl, 65, 5 years younger than Rick Barnes, so he could just pick up right where he left off, Joe, maybe build on it. We'll see.
Sure. There you go.
Just ask Vault.
Good luck with that.
That's the way it's going to go.
Yeah.
Coming home, 615-737-1025, our phone number, 615-737-1025. We will get back into Tennessee and their loss in the Elite Eight yesterday, a little bit later coming up in the program. Some interesting comments coming out of the Titans brass from the owners meeting down in Florida. We'll get into some of those as it relates to the number one pick coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Joe, it is the NFL owners' meetings down in Palm Beach, Florida, on the site of, I believe, last year where PK made up with Tom Pelissero in the breakfast line down there. So hopefully he's doing some reparation of relationships down there as well. Who knows? Maybe Jordan Schultz is down there. I don't know. Could be a PK and Jordan Schultz time down there, Joe.
Jordan Schultz, he's all over the place. How could he not be at the owners' meeting?
It's a good question. It's a good question. Hopefully.
And if he's there, how could he not at least physically threaten Kaharski?
Also a good question.
If not actually act on it. I mean, it would be a big surprise.
It would be. So PK's come out with a couple of different things so far at the owners' meetings that have been pretty interesting. We're going to touch on some of those today on the program. Starting yesterday, he put this piece out there, you know, catching up with Borgonzi and Brian Callahan and Brinker and going over Cam Ward and the number one pick. And some interesting comments from Borgonzi and Callahan specifically here, Joe, that I want to get your thoughts on. It's, you know, the idea of if you really love the quarterback, like if you love Cam Ward at number one, are you really going to be listening that intently to other offers that are thrown your way? And this was the quote that Borgonzi had. Quote, "I was taught over the years, if you find the quarterback that you want and you think he's a franchise quarterback, then you're not going to pass on him." Brian Callahan added to that, says, quote, "I think anytime you can find a quarterback that can lift your football team and that you feel is the caliber of player you're talking about, those guys are worth more. There is really no price on those guys." So he was asked, you know, Kuharski put this out there, says, quote, "So it's entirely possible Borgonzi's phone rings as the draft approaches or on Thursday, April 24th, and the Titans are not open for business." And Borgonzi's response to that was, "Yes, that is possible." So, Joe, with all that in the backdrop, that kind of lines up with the way that I viewed it. Like, to me, if they actually do love Cam Ward, as much as it seems like they do, then there's really not a price that makes a lot of sense for me if I'm the Titans. I keep hearing people throwing out there, well, they really, really like him. They love him. They want him to be their guy. But if you approach him with an offer that's good enough, they'll move off that. That has never made any sense to me. Like, if you love the quarterback, then you take the quarterback. That's how I think good teams operate there. Then the question becomes, Joe, do they actually love the quarterback? And that's what we're going to find out over the coming weeks here. But I thought some interesting stuff there from Borgonzi and Callahan specifically on that front, courtesy of PaulKuharski.com.
Yeah, it's interesting. But again, if you want to believe as a Titans fan that they still would listen, then you can look at that and say, like, yeah, they're playing the game perfectly. That's how you play the game. That's what you say. You say stuff like that publicly, and you put some doubt in those other teams, and you hope that they're like, God, they really are going to take him. We got to have him. You know, I mean, I think at some point, I think you have to take this for what it is, but you could still talk yourself into that. You can always talk yourself into the, you know, the NFL draft. Anything that's set on the record that it's the opposite is true, if you want, you know. I will say beyond that, though, Robbie, the Rappaport and Schefter both at different times, you know, sending out the, it's not done, they are still listening. Yep. That is weird, right? Like, because I don't think either of those guys would do that because an agent told them that, right? It doesn't make any sense.
I don't think so.
If you're going to tweet, I guess anything's possible. But if you're going to tweet that out, to me, that means someone inside the building told you that and right. wants that out there. That's what those guys do. They do the bidding of the people and the teams and the agents that they deal with, and they put stuff out that all those people want out there. So that's what kind of doesn't line up and I guess just keeps the door cracked a little bit for me on this. But, yeah, I mean, everything is pretty overwhelmingly pointing to them taking Cam Ward. You know, it's just I like you said, you know, if you love, you know, love quarterback and take him, that's what good teams do. Yeah, but again, it's like if it's really that good of a quarterback, Yeah.
Right.
Which is also
which, by the way,
question. But yep. You know,
obviously we'll they never really said that in this piece. Like, they're not going to get into, you know, Cam Ward specifically and like their innermost thoughts on him.
Right.
Sitting down with Kuharsky. But I just thought the way that they kind of phrased that was interesting. And then you got to you throw the question out there of, okay, well, is Cam Ward? Do they view Cam Ward as that type of guy? Now, it's interesting. Brian Callahan is speaking right now down at the owners' meetings, and we're going to have some audio coming up in the next segment from what he said down there. But the headline of it is, and TD just put this tweet out there, that Callahan says he feels like the Titans are maybe 2 weeks away from making their decision on what they're going to do with the first pick. We'll get specifically into the audio from Callahan coming up next segment. But then if you're a Titans fan, Joe, and you're listening to that and you're saying, well, at this point, you've met with Cam Ward at the combine. You've gone to his pro day. You've had the private workout with him. And, I mean, that part of it is done. Like, you're not going to be around Cam Ward again before the draft coming up. So if you're 2 weeks away from making your decision, does that show you that you've not really made your decision on Cam Ward at that front? Because I don't think you're getting any new information on him at this point, I guess, is the overall overarching point there.
Yeah. I mean, you're getting new information this week on Shedeur Sanders.
Yep.
You know, by the way. So that'll be really interesting this week, how that goes, how that looks, you know, what is said all around the Shedeur stuff this week. The Titans are doing their homework on him. So, and, you know, like, look, if you do believe that there's something that could pry them away from Cam Ward or the number one pick, which we assume is Cam Ward, then if it was one of those teams right behind him, would they take that extra draft capital and this take Shedeur?
Could be.
What do you think about that one?
It could be the strategy. It could be the strategy.
I don't know. It could, or at least it could be like the pivot, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, okay, you hit this mark of an insane offer, and then we can still get Shedeur, who we actually have rated right there with Cam Ward. I mean, I don't know. The NFL media has determined that Cam Ward is clearly the best quarterback, and that there's a gap. I mean, again, Charles Robinson says on our show, there's a gap. But, you know, these teams do their own individual rankings that are independent of what everybody else talks about before a draft.
Let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome Jared to the program. Jared, good morning. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, good morning, fellas. Hope y'all are all right from that weather last night, as far as everybody else listening.
Yes, sir. Same
to
you.
Yeah. Yes, sir. Also, you know, we had the best draft board guy last year, and that was Rand. He had Michael Penix pegged at number 8 like nobody else. But, you know, I don't know what this spells this year, unfortunately, fellas. But, you know, if we look at this on paper with Cam Ward, if we were to take him, which I think we do, he's, what, the lowest rated player ever to be taken that high? And to me, if it's just on paper, like, there has to be something that you can take with this paper and, like, produce something with it outside of potential and leadership. And if they do all this, I'm just going to be down on them for a while until I get proven wrong, because I just don't necessarily trust. I'm not saying the evaluation of just the Titans, but I don't really trust Cam Ward and any of these other quarterbacks to be taken that high. And as a fan, there's just a lot going on. But, you know, just looking at this on paper, fellas, I just don't necessarily feel that confident about the pick. And if we do it, then it makes me trust these guys even less that we're so locked in on this guy too. And I get the game and all the stuff that goes along with it, but, you know, I just don't also trust these Titans to know, or the brass to know how to play the game, to be honest. So, anyway, so I hope you have a great day. Keep stirring it up. Tighten up.
Thank you, Jared. Appreciate it. Sound like a little defeated Jared from Spring Hill there. That was not a very – that was a half-hearted tighten up at the end of that, Joe.
Tighten up, I guess.
We'll get into some comments from Brian Callahan from the owners' meetings this morning. Coming up next as it relates to the number one overall pick. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.